ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife crime.
There's nothing like crime gangs, vendettas, and shootouts. I know it's still a familiar story in the areas of Australia today, in Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane, the Gold Coast, but it was also very true 100 years ago when criminals involved in disputes over the selling of sly grog, race fixing, and such other colourful activities took to each other, often with lethal consequences. And so did the fateful afternoon at a boarding house in Carlton in Melbourne in October 1927, where Squizzy Taylor confronted Snowy Cutmore. The infamous criminals Leslie Squizzy Taylor and John Daniel Snowy Cutmore shot it out. The outcome was lethal. Roy Molloy is a Melbourne-based author specialising in the history of crime in Australia. And he's written a number of books, including Squizzy, the biography, The Forensics, The Man, The Vendetta, and Norman Brune, War and the Razor. And his account of the gun battle, titled Squizzy and Snowy, Mutual Shootout or Popular Legend, appears in the latest history magazine from the Royal Australian Historical Society. Roy joins us this evening. Roy, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks for having me. It's a thrill to be here.
Well, set the scene. Tell me, who were Squizzy Taylor and Snowy Cutmore anyway, and what were they involved in?
It's a fascinating set of stories, and it's they kind of lead from a very early place in about 1907 all the way up to the 27th of October, 1927. And we see Squizzy Taylor as a punk gangster that really is made by the women in his life. Dolly Gray, his wife, takes a street kid and
are
really
they Melbourne
him,
Crims or Sydney
yeah,
Crims?
No, very, very Melbourne Crims. And even then, there's so much mistruth that people have grabbed hold of and grown a set of stories that just don't exist around this. If we look at the Norman Brune story, Norman Brune for the
listeners
at home. Yeah,
who was he?
Absolutely. So you might mispronounce his name and be more familiar with Norman Brun, is how he gets pronounced a lot. He was he's credited as being the founder of the Razor Gangs in Sydney.
Right.
We look at that Underbelly show as a really good example where you get Kate Lee and Tilly Devine up against in this great big war against Norman Brun. The truth of it is Norman Brun was there for 7 months of his life. That was it. Whole stock standard, 7 months. And in that time, he never met Tilly Devine. She was in jail for all but one of those months.
Brun was a Melbourne crim as well.
Absolutely. So Norman Brun comes back from not just the European First World War. He goes over the top in Gallipoli. He goes over the top in France. And when he comes back here in 1921, he's got three extremely dangerous diseases. I won't go into great detail, but you can imagine. And then he's asked to go get a job. It was never going to end any other way. And so it really is Squizzy that, you know, they make this partnership that goes a little bit south. Squizzy sends him up to Sydney to lay low.
Oh, okay. So Squizzy Taylor and Snowy Cutmore, what sort of crime outfit were they running in Melbourne?
So again, Norman Brune is credited for so much more than he actually participated in. All of the research comes back to really amplifying that he was harassed and hounded by the police until he just could not land a job anymore. And we see him turning to crime probably just to live. It's in those desperate moments that he comes across Squizzy Taylor that says, well, look, you are pretty capable of hurting people. And he puts that to good use.
So what is he? So Norman Brune becomes what? Squizzy Taylor's hitman, does he?
Well, Squizzy's running this scam with another fella. Right. And they need some people scared into paying up. And they send some very hardened, war-capable ex-servicemen out to get the money.
Like Norman Brune.
Absolutely. Norman and we get this flood in the market in that 1918 period of men who are very hardened, traumatised, and willing to hurt someone for money. So it goes south, and Norman ends up in Sydney. By the time he gets to Sydney, drugs and alcohol are his only coping mechanism through that PTSD.
Okay. So just to return to that question, which we didn't get an answer for, though, Squizzy Taylor and Snowy Cutmore, what rackets were they running in Melbourne?
So we see Snowy Cutmore really go back to the earliest days of Squizzy's career, and Squizzy isn't alone. Squizzy is the second Squizzy, his older brother Claude, who now I worked in maximum security jails for a number of years, and I qualify this word psychopath by somebody that really enjoys the process of hurting other people. Squizzy's older brother Claude is the original Squizzy, and he's a very dangerous guy, and we see him and Snowy very early on. They're mates throughout the Fitzroy Vendetta, where Snowy is fencing stolen jewellery for Squizzy in Sydney. So by the time we see Snowy in Sydney standing physically beside Norman Brune when he's shot dead, we see him then in Melbourne a short time later.
Yes. Okay. Well, to set the scene in Melbourne, so Norman Brune's been sent up to Melbourne. And Cutmore's up there as well. And in June 1927, Cutmore and Brune are in a Slygrog shop in Charlotte Lane, Darlinghurst.
Yeah. But
they've also got two other mates there. Who are they?
Yeah, look, there's a cast of thousands, and it becomes very becomes very murky very quickly. And you've got to really – part of the history research process for me – so I'm an Aboriginal fella, and we love the yarn. That's the old expression, right? We love to focus in on the story. But that's been problematic because people have been too interested in making the yarn bigger and bigger and also probably trying to tell it like an Al Capone story. Let's also remember Al Capone is 30s. So we're 15 years earlier than that in the makeup. But we see these guys walking out of a Slygrog shop. And look, the running theory is that Norman Brune, in his drugged and drunk state, had gone away from the playbook a little bit, and he'd started shaking down other crooks and their Slygrog for taking the money out of his competitors. And they weren't going to tolerate that.
Okay, so they're in the Slygrog shop. They step out onto the street. Gunfire breaks out, and Brune is shot dead. Cutmore has disappeared.
That's right.
So Cutmore goes back to Melbourne, and Squizzy Taylor believes what, that Cutmore is involved. Well, those two don't get on, do they?
They did get on until about this point. So Snowy ended up in Sydney. He was training horses. He had a habit of flying the coop whenever the heat was on him. Mm-hmm. He had a mother who owned the boarding house in Carlton that he ends up dying in. And any time the heat had died down, he'd come back home. He had a free bed and breakfast, right? So he goes up to Sydney, and he's spending his time there, and he falls in with Norman Brune. But we think that that's orchestrated by Squizzy. Squizzy says to Norman Brune, "Go up to Sydney. I've got a mate there." Squizzy's brother Claude is up there at the same time. His brother Stan is up there. So it's a very open market for these guys who all know and respect each other pretty well. But very soon after the shooting, we see Snowy Cutmore fly back to Melbourne, on a train back to Melbourne, with a very conspicuous fella called Herbert Budgie, as in the budgerigar, Herbert Budgie Wilson. Now, it's Budgie Wilson, this link.
Squizzy believes that Cutmore may have shot Brune, does he?
The police certainly say in the newspapers, which Squizzy would have been aware of, if Cutmore didn't shoot him, he knows who did. Now, we don't think that Cutmore did pull a trigger that night.
Okay.
But Squizzy wanted answers, and he got around saying very publicly in Melbourne, Norman was a great fella. Whoever shot him, I'm going to get you.
Okay. So Cutmore is presumably keeping out of harm's way in relation to Squizzy. But then they run into each other, apparently, at the races.
Yeah, look, I can say I need to add probably in Sydney there are two brothers called the Kelly Brothers who go by the Kelly Gang, and they are very closely associated with Budgie Wilson and Snowy Cutmore. Mm-hmm. And we believe that they are present at this shooting with Phil the Jew Jeffs. So that's there in Sydney. But by the time Snowy gets home, I've got to say openly, Snowy fears no man. Okay. We also see Snowy's post-mortem report in his biopsy that looks at his brain when they weigh it, and they say that he had two areas in his brain that were affected by blunt force trauma, probably in his childhood. So we're working with a guy here who has impaired judgment and probably doesn't manage violence like you or I would. So we see him arrive at the Caulfield races with Budgie Wilson, and they're hanging around. Mm-hmm. These guys don't travel singularly. They travel in packs. So we assume that Squizzy's with his entourage as well. They're in the betting ring. A great big fight breaks out, and the stewards kick them all out, and they go in separate directions. But we know provably that that was the last time Squizzy and Snowy see each other. Fun fact, Snowy Cutmore also contracts Spanish flu at the races that day.
I'm speaking with Roy Malloy. Now, he's written a very interesting piece about the legendary shootout between Squizzy Taylor and Snowy Cutmore back in the 1920s in Melbourne, which ended up badly for both of them. But, of course, who shot who has always been something of a question, and it's a question which Roy Malloy is seeking to answer by going back to the sources. So hang on. So they have a falling out of the races. They're all kicked out of the races. Cutmore comes down with Spanish flu, as you say. And he goes back to his mother's boarding house, and he's bedridden in the boarding house.
That's correct.
But his mate Wilson decides apparently to go and see Squizzy Taylor at the Great Northern Hotel in Rathdown Street in Carlton. Why is he ratting on Snowy here, is he?
It's a million-dollar question. Two things. What was said at that fight? That's one of the questions. Mm. We always got to ask the police forensic style questions, right? What was that question? But then the next question we ask is, how do they come in touch with each other and what are they doing? Mm-hmm. We know that Squizzy that night is getting around with a guy called Thomas. And Thomas is a young boxer who's got a lot of affiliations to the underworld. He lives in Young Street in Fitzroy. And they're making their way between pubs. And it's probably my estimation that Squizzy's going from pub to pub, shaking down blokes for money.
Right.
Right. So he's going getting bets, picking up betting money. But we also then see probably it's in walking distance, the Carlton pub that the Great Northern, that Herbert Budgie Wilson has made his way to a pub, and in walks Squizzy Taylor.
So now he says something to Squizzy, but whether it's, look, let's make it up with Snowy, or whether it's let's go and shoot Snowy, is a question, isn't it?
I think you're spot on. I don't like to invent things. I think I've got a gap missing, and there is a very big gap here. Mm. You just go with logic, right? And I reckon you get two blokes who, there are a lot of flash and talk, but they can't shoot each other in public. Let's be real, right? Mm. So they probably go, well, let's go and work this out together. So they get in the car. The taxi is out the front, and this fellow who's been driving Squizzy around all afternoon is still out the front. So he drives them, the three of them, to the boarding house. Yeah.
Now, this is the boarding house of Snowy Cutmore's mother.
Yeah, number 50 Barclay Street.
His mother runs the boarding house.
Yep, owns.
Owns the boarding house. Okay, so they, but as they apparently down their drinks waiting for the taxi, a bartender apparently overhears Squizzy Taylor tell Budgie Wilson, quote, "You have to do the shooting. I'll be a pretty backstop for you." Yeah, do we believe that?
Again, there's so many people that, like, I always grew up knowing that everybody had a dad, had a brother, had a roommate, knew a barber, that had a bookie that knew Squizzy Taylor.
That's right.
Right? We have to always remember that's a big player here, and we just don't know. Let's say that it was said. Hmm. We also don't know that it's talking about Snowy, because these guys talked about and threatened about shooting lots of people all day long every day.
Hmm. Anyway, the three of them, Squizzy Taylor and Budgie Wilson, turn up at the boarding house, and they're shown upstairs where Snowy is in bed with a flu. They're shouting, and then, heaven's sake, there's a gun battle inside the bedroom, is there? Mm.
We need to also look at the time frames, and this hadn't been explored until really I put this book together. The time frames here, as you work it out, and I won't bore you with the way I've worked this out, but it's pretty thorough in the biography, is that there's probably 45 minutes from walking in that door to the moment when the shooting happens. Bridget Cutmore, Snowy's mum, she's making a roast out the back. We also then find out later in the postmortem that Budgie's also living there. He knows the place intimately, and they're standing in positions, and we've proved this through live reenactments of where the bullets ended up and where they were shot from. We also have barreling reports and forensics reports on where, which barrels meet the barrel marks on which bullets to know who pulled the trigger on which gun. Mm-hmm. The way I read the play...
So what happened?
Yeah, look, the way I read the play, there's three different guns that are recovered. So there's a Melior pistol that I believe wasn't Squizzy's, though it was recovered in his coat pocket. Mm-hmm. Squizzy had a box of bullets in his coat, and he had a Webley Scott pistol in his hand. I believe that Budgie Wilson was holding the Melior pistol, and Snowy had a very famous pistol called the Destroyer. He had Destroyer written on the pistol. I believe there's an argument going on, and they're talking about a whole bunch of things. Squizzy's standing at the foot of the bed, and Budgie Wilson is standing to Snowy's left as Snowy lays there. Mm-hmm. Bridget Cutmore walks in and says something that makes Squizzy shoot her in the shoulder. At that point, Snowy plugs Squizzy twice. One bullet hits the box of bullets in Squizzy's breast pocket, flattened, but the other one goes clean through him into his kidneys. Budgie Wilson then unloads 11 rounds into Snowy and some other stray bullets, and they really do a number all over him. But there are two men on the ground now, and Bridget Cutmore collapsed against the wall, and only one man standing is Budgie Wilson. Yeah, yeah. He rounds up the...
Because Snowy Cutmore's got off a couple of rounds into Squizzy, has he?
He has. So it can only happen in this order because Snowy's almost certainly killed in the first shot. Goes through his heart. So we see Snowy now dead. We see Squizzy collapsed with a bullet in his kidney, Bridget Cutmore on the floor, and Budgie Wilson standing. We believe he took the murder weapon, knowing it's a murder weapon. This guy's he's not green at this. He knows he's holding a murder weapon. He puts it in Squizzy's coat pocket, takes Squizzy's gun and Snowy's gun and runs. He runs out the back door. He puts one of the guns in the toilet cistern and he throws the other one over a fence as he runs to make his getaway. The police recover both guns in time. Squizzy then pulls himself to his feet and staggers out the front and gets in a vehicle. Now, we need to go back a little bit and remember that there were two brothers I talked about earlier called the Kelly brothers.
Mm-hmm.
So Squizzy's now finding himself in the taxi, and the taxi driver is present. Thomas is in the taxi, and they start driving to St. Vincent's. It's not a long way. If you walked it, I reckon you could walk in about 25 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But the traffic is such that they're about 45 minutes to get there. By the time they find themselves in the middle of that journey, Thomas knows that Squizzy's done for, and he says, "Mate, I'm done." He jumps out. He doesn't want to be associated with a dead Squizzy Taylor.
No.
But when the taxi arrives at St. Vincent's Hospital, we see Squizzy himself. He staggers in. He's still able to walk, but he's not able to speak. He staggers in and collapses. And a short time later, one of the Kelly brothers shows up from Sydney at St. Vincent's minutes after Squizzy arrives and says, "Is he dead?" Only one of two things could have happened.
I see.
They've either ordered the hit, or Thomas has known these guys, which is highly, highly unlikely because they're from completely different areas, and gone and found them and said, "Hey, it's happened."
Mm. Well, no one was ever convicted, I presume, of any of this, were they, or not?
It's kind of like when World War II ended and the Nuremberg trials ended and we thought Hitler might have lived. People had lost their appetite. They just wanted it over with.
Yeah.
And the police are much the same with this. They are thrilled that it's over. Budgie Wilson tries to flee back to Sydney, as do the Kelly brothers in a car.
Mm-hmm.
They round Budgie Wilson up halfway on a train, and they round the Kelly brothers up in a car. They bring him back. They do process them. There's a very serious court case, but it doesn't really delve into it like they would have if they really want. In my opinion, it doesn't really pull it apart.
Okay. It's gee whiz, it's a part of Australian history which we all think we know about, but it was infinitely more sordid and violent than maybe we thought. I presume Mrs. Cutmore survived, did she?
She did. Snowy was married at the time with a baby, and he had, minutes before Squizzy arrived, sent his wife down the street on an errand, maybe say deliberately, but she walked in the house just after that all left.
Oh, but she'd come back. She'd
found
back.
Mother-in-law staggering around crying, disorientated.
Oh, dear idea. She with a bullet in the shoulder.
Yeah, bullet in the shoulder, yeah.
Dear idea. All right. Roy, it's been terrific to have your time and to tell the story. Thank you.
Would love to tell another one. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.